You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Midrash of the Week podcast. For this week's podcast, we're going to do something a little bit different. Up until now in our podcast, we've been looking at Midrashei Agada, meaning Agadot, which are somehow connected in one way or another to books of Tanakh, and they are part of a sort of commentary on books of Tanakh. Today we're going to be looking at what I would categorize more specifically as an Agadah, not a Midrash. It is a story about a number of rabbis, a story which is probably familiar to many of you. It is not a Midrash in the classic sense, in the strict sense of the word, because it's not really part of one of these, quote, commentaries on Tanakh. Nevertheless, as we will see, this Agadah contains within it a brilliant piece of commentary, a brilliant piece of exegesis on Tanakh, together with a good measure of theology and a sort of philosophy of life. And as you will see, it's also appropriate for this time of year, which is why I've chosen to teach it today. A careful reading of this Agadah will take a long time, and therefore I'm going to start teaching it in this week's podcast, and I will continue in next week's podcast so that the shiur, in essence, will be broken up over 2 weeks. This Agadah, of which I speak, is found at the very end of Masechet Makot, on Kafdalid Amud Bet, and it's sort of a continuation of a story that comes before it, where a few rabbis were walking together, Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Akiva, right, the leading rabbis of their day, were walking together. Right, and then the previous page in the Gemara tells us one story about something that happened together while they were walking together. And then on Kaftal and Amud Bet, we hear the following famous story. Shuf Pam Achat, Hayu Olim Li Yerushalayim, right? These rabbis were walking together and they went up to Yerushalayim. Kivan Shehigiyu Lahar Tzofim Kar'u Bigdehem, right? They see the destruction of Yerushalayim all around them, and when they get to Har Tzofim, the highest place in Yerushalayim from where they could see the whole city, they rent their garments. Kivan Shehigiyu Lahar Habayit Ra'u Shu'al Sheyatza Mibet Kodshei HaKadoshim. If they get to Har HaBayit, which is not too far from Har HaTzofim, you can see Har HaBayit from Har HaTzofim, and they get there and they see a fox coming out of the Kodesh Kedoshim, the Holy of Holies, or the place that where the Holy of Holies had been. Hitchilu hin bochin, right, the rabbis all start to cry, v'Rabbi Akiva mitzachek, and Rabbi Akiva laughs. Amrulo mipnei ma'ata mitzachek, and the rabbis look at him like he's out of his mind, and say to him, "Why are you laughing? Right? How could you laugh when we see all of this around us?" Amar lahem mipnei ma'atem bochim. Rabbi Akiva, somewhat surprisingly, asked him, "Well, why are you crying?" Amrulo, makom shekatuv bo v'hazar hakarev yumat v'achshav shu'alim hilchu bo v'lo nivke. The rabbis say to him, the place about which it says, right, the Beit HaMikdash, the Kodesh Kodoshim, about which it says in the Torah, V'hazar HaKarev Yumat, anybody who is not a Kohen, if such a person draws near to this place, they will die because of the holiness of the place. And now, Shu'alim Hilchubo, right, now foxes are wandering about, right, and the words Shu'alim Hilchubo, right, they're not just describing the image before them. They're quoting a pasuk, right? Look at the end of the book of Echa, Megillat Echa. Al ze haya daveli benu, al ele chashchu einenu, al har tzion sheshamim shu'alim hilchubo, right? The end of the book of Echa describes har tzion, right, which might very well be, not har tzion as we think of it nowadays, Har Tzion might refer to Har HaBayit, right, the mountain of Tzion, which is desolate, Shu'alim Hilchubo, right? Before their eyes, these rabbis are seeing the image from Megillat Echa right there in front of them, right? The symbol of the destruction, foxes walking around on Har HaBayit. And don't forget, foxes are animals, and this is something that's played on, this image is played on a lot in Tanakh, particularly in Neviim Achronim, of foxes specifically wandering around in places of desolation. Foxes, and such is the reality, foxes tend to hang out in places where there aren't a lot of people around. You know, in fact, it's known, right, that if you see a fox coming into town, right, if it's walking down the street where you live, then you have to be careful because chances are there's something wrong with the fox. It's sick in one way or another, rabies or whatnot, and therefore you have to be careful because that's not the nature of foxes. Foxes hang out in places where there aren't people, in desolation, ruins, right, such as being as is described at the end of the Book Eicha and at the end of Masechet Makot. So the rabbis are crying because they see this symbol of desolation unfolding before their eyes. They see, you know, Megillat Eicha coming to life, so to speak, and to them that's the ultimate feeling of desolation. And if you read on in Megillat Eicha, you understand even more why this feeling of desolation. Ata Hashem le'olam teshev kisacha ledor vador, lama lanetach tishkachenu ta'azvenu le'orach yamim. Right, the destruction of Yerushalayim, the foxes walking around on Har Tzion, this is the symbol or the proof, right, that Hashem has left, that the Shekhinah is gone, right, and Megillat Eicha is asking, you know, Hashem, are you going to come back? When will you come back? Hashivenu Hashem Elecha v'nashuv achadei shamenu kikedem. Right, there's no time to do a full shiur, of course, of Megillat Eicha at the moment, but right, the question of Megillat Eicha basically is, right, is this it, or is Hashem going to return? We have, you know, centuries of hindsight, right, and years of philosophizing to and developing a theology about the Chorban to understand that we have some sort of understanding of how we deal with the destruction. How do we understand it? What does it mean about our relationship with Hashem? But the people who were experiencing Chorban Bayit, they looked around them at the destruction and they said, this is it, Hashem is gone. Hashem is never coming back. The Shekhinah has left. We've lost our chance, right? And only while, you know, through the book of Megillat Eicha, right, is the question being asked and then possibly answered with a positive answer that perhaps there's a chance that Hashem will return. But it's not a given, right? And so, you know, back to our rabbis, they're standing there on Har HaBayit, looking at the desolation before them, seeing a fox walking where Kodesh Kodeshim once was, and their reaction, and quite understandably, is to cry. And yet Rabbi Akiva laughs, right? And so they, quite understandably, say to him, but Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? Right? How? And he says to them, almost as if he doesn't understand, but why are you crying? And they say, why are we crying? Look at the scene before us. And he says, Lekach ani mitzachek. I am laughing because of the very thing that is causing you to cry. Which of course seems, you know, astounding when one first hears it. But then Rabbi Akiva goes into a long explanation as to what he's saying. Dichtiv, but it says in the book of Yeshayahu, Va'aida li edim ne'emanim, et Uriah ha-Kohen ve'et Zechariah ben Yevarachyahu. V'chima inyan Uriah etzel Zechariah. Right, he quotes a pasuk, which we will go look at carefully inside in a bit, from the book of Yeshayahu, where Yeshayahu called as witnesses two individuals, Uriah ha-Kohen and Zechariah, the son of Yevarachyahu. And Rabbi Akiva now asks, now what's the connection between Uriah HaKohen and Zechariahu? Uriah b'mikdash rishon, Zechariah b'mikdash shini. Right now he's understanding this Uriah and Zechariah as being two specific individuals. We'll discuss a little bit later as to who these people refer to. But for now, let's just read what the Gemara says, what the story says. Right, Rabbi Akiva is saying, well, what's the connection? If Yeshayahu is calling as witnesses these two people, one of them lived during the time of Bayit Rishon, right? He was a Navi during the time of Bayit Rishon, and the second, Zechariah, right, who's a better known individual, Ben Navi. He was a Navi during the time of Shiva Tzion, during the Bayit Sheni. What's the connection between these two? Why is Yeshayahu calling these two people as Edim, as witnesses together? Ella, Talah HaKatuv Nevuato Shel Zechariah, Din Nevuato Shel Uriah. Right? Why are they being brought together? Because the pasuk, this pasuk from Yeshayahu, is making the prophecy of Zechariah dependent upon the prophecy of Uriah. Right? Meaning, if one of them happens, if the prophecy of Uriah is fulfilled, so too will the prophecy of Zechariah. Be'uriah k'tiv, right, what is the prophecy of Uriah? Lachen diglachem tzion sadeh techaresh. Right, because of you, Uriah says, again, we're going to look at all of these psukim carefully later on in this shiur. Uriah's prophecy was, because of you, Tzion, Yerushalayim, will be a plowed field. In other words, will be destroyed. And the Zechariah k'tiv, in the book of Zechariah, it says, Od yishfu zkini uzkinot v'rechovot Yerushalayim. Right? Once again, this is a good prophecy, right? A prophecy of comfort, of nechama. Once again, in the future, old people, old men and old women will sit in the squares of Yerushalayim, right? Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, and people will not die young because of the Chorban and the Galut. They will live to be old, and they will be sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim. Until the prophecy of Uriah was not fulfilled, meaning the destruction, I was afraid that maybe the prophecy of Zechariah, which is dependent upon the prophecy of Uriah, would not be fulfilled. Now that the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, right, as we see, this destruction before us, right? So it is clear, it is known that the prophecy of Zechariah will be fulfilled as well. Akiva nechamtanu, right? And they say to him in these words, Akiva, you have comforted us. Akiva, you have comforted us. Right? A beautiful, beautiful story. Right? Every time I read it, you know, I get chills reading the story. Even in the simplest reading, right? Even the simplest reading of the story, it's beautiful, right? What is Rabbi Akiva saying? Right? You look at the destruction before you, and it's hard to imagine that this will ever change. But he assures them, right? We know, we see from this pasuk that these two prophecies are linked, and if one happens, the other one will happen. So we know that one day the nechama, the rebuilding will come as well, right? And this apparently comforts the other rabbis. Even on this level, it's a beautiful story. However, I've always had a number of questions about this story, if read only on this simplest level. Question number one is, who are we talking about here? Right? Clearly, Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest rabbis. One could argue, perhaps, yeah, the greatest rabbi, you know, that was. However, we're talking about, who is he talking to in the story? We're talking about, you know, the top rabbanim of that generation, right? Just as great as Rabbi Akiva, just as knowledgeable as Rabbi Akiva, just as spiritual as Rabbi Akiva, right? We're talking about the greatest of the great here. Clearly, he knew about all of these psukim that Rabbi Akiva was talking about as well, right? They didn't know that there were also prophecies of Nechama, as in addition to the prophecies of destruction, right? They hadn't read, you know, all of those books, particularly Yeshayahu, but you know, all the other books which have the Nevuot of Nechama, which promises that one day in the future, you know, good will return to Am Yisrael, right? This was your private knowledge of Rabbi Akiva. Right? So why are they completely forgetting about all of those psukim, all of those parts of the Nevuot, when Rabbi Akiva is not? Right? Why is it that he's able to focus on that where they are not? They're not able to remember that or see that or see it as something that's a possibility. The other question is, right, about Rabbi Akiva's shiur here, his discussion of these psukim. That while he you know, is clearly choosing this psukim in part because of the pasuk from Yeshayahu, which mentions Uriah and Zechariah, but still one has to wonder, right, why specifically these psukim? Why specifically does he choose that prophecy of Uriah, right? A barely known Navi among all of the Nevi'ei Israel, right? Uriah HaKohen, like almost nobody knows who he is. Why choose that pasuk? And why choose this specific Nevuah from Zechariah? Right? There are other Nevuot from Zechariah. Why choose this one? There are plenty of other Nevuot, both of Chorban and of Nechama in the books of Nevi'im. Right? Why are these specific Nevuot chosen by Rabbi Akiva? Why is he focusing on what these particular prophets have to say? And even if you say that he did it because of the pasuk from Yeshayahu, which mentions Uriah and Zechariah, nevertheless, that pasuk almost feels like it's an excuse to use these two psukim. Like, why are these two psukim being used specifically? What's the message specifically that Rabbi Akiva chooses when choosing these psukim when he could have chosen so many others? To get to the bottom of these questions, right, to really understand what I think is Rabbi Akiva's full message in this Agadah, we'll take us on a little bit of a journey throughout all of these psukim in the Tanakh, a journey which we're only going to start today, as I mentioned earlier, and we will finish in next week's podcast. So the one pasuk that I want to look at today is the pasuk that is quoted from the book of Yeshayahu. It's found in the book of Yeshayahu, the beginning of Parakhet. Vayomer Hashem Elai, Kach Lecha Gilayon, Gadol Uchtov Alav Becheret Enosh, Lemeher Shalal Chashbaz. Yeshayahu was told by Hashem to take a scroll and to write on it four words. Lemeher Shalal Chashbaz, which is basically two ways of saying the same thing. Lemaher shalal, right, something about being, working in, doing something in haste, quickly. Shalal, right, spoils, as in a battle, war. Chash, right, also fast, quickly. Baz, right, also baz, parallel to shalal, having something to do with the spoils of war. Va'aida li edim ne'emanim et Uriah ha-Kohen ve'et Zechariah ben Yevarachyahu. So now we're understanding who these two witnesses were, or why they were being called within the context of the book of Yeshayahu. Right? He has a document here. He's written these four words, which we don't entirely understand yet, and he's told to bring as witnesses to the writing of this document these two people, Uriah and Zechariahu. Va'ikrav el ha-nevi'a v'tar v'teliben v'ayomer Hashem elai k'ra shimo maher shalal chashbaz. Right? So Yeshayahu and the woman who's called a Nevi'ah, presumably his wife, have a child. And as that happens a number of times in the book of Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu is told to give his children, his sons, these symbolic names. And he's told to name his child Maher Shalal Chashbaz, right, those four words that were written on the dark document, a name which has not, you know, caught on too much how people call their children these days. Nevertheless, that is what he's told to call them, right, somehow symbolizing this, the same thing of whatever it is that's on the document. Ki, now we're going to have an explanation. B'terem yeda hana'ar kero avi v'imi. Because before this child who was just born is going to be able to say avi v'imi, right, before he'd be able to say, you know, ima and abba, right? It's an interesting little side point that apparently during the time of Yeshayahu people didn't say ima, abba, or whatever other possibilities you might have. Rather, a child would call his parents avi v'imi, my father and my mother. Yisa et chel damesek ve'et shalal shomron lifnei melech Ashur. Right, before this child reaches the age of saying his first words, the chel of damesek, right, the armies of damesek, right, from Aram, right, in the general area of Syria of today, and of Shomron, right, the northern kingdom, will be taken away by Melech Ashur, right, in plain English, that Melech Ashur will come about and will take away the armies of Shomron and Aram, who were threatening the Malchut Yehuda, the kingdom of Yehuda at that time, right? There was a treaty between Shomron and Damascus, right? They were threatening Yehuda, and Ashur is going to take them away, meaning that their threat is going to be taken away by Ashur before this child reaches a relatively young age. And then he goes on, I'll paraphrase the next little bit. In the next few psukim, Hashem goes on to say that Ashur is also going to come to Yehuda, right? We know this, right? That he not only destroys the northern kingdom and exiles them, Ashur also comes to Yehuda, does not completely destroy Yehuda, but causes quite a bit of destruction. And as it says in Pasuk, Chet v'chalaf b'Yehuda shataf. Ashur will flood Yehuda. Va'avar ad savar yagia. The waters of Ashur, right? The metaphoric waters of Ashur will reach until the neck of Yehuda. Right? They're almost going to be drowning. V'haya mutot knafav melo rochav artzicha Immanuel. Right? And Ashur is going to fill your land. Immanuel being a nickname, which we'll explain in a moment, for Yehuda. Ro'u amim v'chotu v'ha'azinu kol merchakei aretz hitazru v'chotu hitazru v'chotu. Right? Basically, a pasuk describing that the nations are going to come and they're going to try to destroy Yehuda. Utsu etza v'tufar dabru davar v'lo yakum ki Immanuel. Right? But no matter what Ashur does, they're not going to destroy Yehuda. Right? Why? Ki Immanuel. Because Hashem is with us. Okay, now to understand fully what the significance of the Immanuel is, which we've now seen twice, right? First being called Yehuda, being called Immanuel in Pasuk Chet, and then this idea that the enemy will not destroy Yehuda completely, ki Immanuel. Right? We'll go back to understand that in a moment, but just briefly to understand what it all has to do with our story. Right, this whole idea of Ashur coming to Yehuda and causing destruction but not destroying them completely, ki Immanuel, because Hashem is with us, it all goes back to right, what was happening in the paragraph just before. Right, lemaher shalal chashibaz, right, that somehow the booties of war will come quickly. Right, these symbolic words refer to Ashur coming to Eretz Yisrael, destroying Shomron, destroying the northern kingdom. And also Damascus, right? Also Aram, and getting them off the back of Yehuda, but also coming and causing destruction in Yehuda, but not destroying Yehuda completely. Okay, that is the symbolism, and that is within the context of Sefer Yeshua what Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah ben Yevarchiah are coming to witness. Right, that this is going to happen. That's what the symbolic words on this document mean. Now, to understand the significance of this Immanuel, of this name Immanuel, you just have to go a little bit back in Sefer Yeshua, in Sefer Yeshayahu, to the end of Perek Zayin, rather the middle of Perek Zayin, where we have another example of Yeshayahu being told to have a child and to name him a symbolic name. And we see this in Pasuk, Yudalid, right? Just before this, the king of Yehuda, Ahaz, has been told, basically this whole idea that what we were just talking about, that Damascus and Shomron will, the Malchut Yisrael, will be taken off by Ashur, right? The same idea. And that his Malchut will be okay. And Hashem, through the Navi, tells the king to ask of a proof of this from God, right? The king is told to ask for an oath, for a sign that this is going to happen, and probably feigning false piety. The king says, no, I'm not going to ask, but it probably has more to do with the fact that he doesn't want to have anything to do with the Navi. And Hashem says, well, I'm going to give you an oath anyway. I'm going to give you a sign anyway. And Pasuk Yidalet, he says, this is the oath. Yeshayahu is going to have a child. Karata Shemo Immanuel. His name will be Immanuel. Chema udvash yochel, v'da'ato ma'oz, yochel, v'da'ato ma'oz b'ra'o v'chor v'tov, ki b'ter nida ha'nar ma'oz b'ra'o v'chor v'tov, te'azev ha'adama asher atah katz mipnei shnei melacher. right? Before this child, Emmanuel, grows up, right? The same thing that we see with later on, Meher Shalal Hashbaz, right? That the kings who are causing you grief from Aram and from Israel will be gone, right? Will have left the land. Right, so basically, to sum up this whole thing, what is it that Uriah HaKohen and Zechariah, who Ben Yevarachiah, who are witnessing? They're witnessing this idea of Maher Shalal Chashbaz, this idea of Immanuel, right? That the two threatening kings will be gone. Why? Ki Immanuel, right? Because Hashem is with us, right? And this is the promise that is given to Yehuda at this point, right? You are being bothered now by two kings. Ashur is going to come and take those two kings away, right? You also are going to suffer from Ashur, but you will not be destroyed. Ki Immanuel, right? That Ki Immanuel. That is basically what these two witnesses are coming to testify about. On that note, I'm going to end today's podcast, and next week we will pick up the middle of the Shi'ur to continue to try to understand the other Pesukim quoted by Rabbi Akiva and how all of these come together to explain why Rabbi Akiva was laughing when everybody else could only cry.